Welcome to this episode of the Comedy Defect Podcast. My name is Winter, I'm a comedian, and this is my show. I don't know about you guys, I nearly forgot about the intro there. I couldn't put the intro together in my head. Look, I've been off all the painkillers and everything for my legs for the last about few weeks, and I tell you what, I'm getting tired just speaking now. Honestly, it's ridiculous. I can't really do much. And so this is the third lot of links I've done in the day, and I'm hanging. You wouldn't think talking would be hard, but I tell you what, it takes a lot out of you. So this is another episode of the Comedy Defect podcast. What kind of what we're doing, Joe? But look, my name's Winter. I'm a comedian, and this is my show. As I say, look, if you're new to the podcast, welcome. If you're old to the podcast, what is the fuck I'm saying? If you're old to the podcast. Oh, I'm not even on any drugs. I've got no excuse. But if you're old to the podcast, thank you for coming back. This intro is going to be longer, I feel, than the other intros that I've done in the past. But that's how my brain is working right now. So look, it is what it is. And there's an excellent comedian on this one as well. And you're going to enjoy them. And you're going to hear them for about an hour. And it's going to be great. Look, you can find them online as well. I've told you their name. The name is Callie Beaton. She has been on comedy panel shows on TV. She has been on Comedy Central. And she is such a great speaker that I didn't have to do much during this podcast. I had to ask the questions. And if you hear my voice during this podcast episode, you will hear a bit of a strange sort of a tone in me. It was because we recorded it during a cold snap during the lockdown. And because I record this in what is essentially a shed, I was freezing. And so I'm just trying to get the words out and trying to keep my energy up and not go into hypothermia. And just like, you know, just sort of a minute 36, you can hear my stomach kick into overdrive, trying to burn some of those fat reserves to keep me alive. But I wasn't nervous. I was just in a bit of a state because it was so cold. It just makes me sound like I'm really having a bit of a sort of a panic attack and jittery meltdown. But that aside, look, this comedian is excellent. She also has her own podcast called Namaste Motherfuckers. So go and check that out and go find that where all you get all your podcasts from. And you can also follow her on all the socials. At Callie Beaton Comedian. That's CallyBeaton Comedian. So go find her on all the socials there and go and check her out live. She's absolutely excellent. When I was gigging with her on the circuit, she was tearing up. She's brilliant. And she's done all the shows in Edinburgh and everything like that. I see her posters everywhere. She's brilliant. And look, so go and check her out. So follow her on all the socials, and we're going to speak to her in a couple of seconds. Just going to do another bit of the intro if I can get it out of my head. Look, you can follow me on all the socials as well, at Winter Dominus. That's WinterDominus. And look, you can find me on everywhere as well as Winter Phonander, because that's my name, really, Winter Phonander. But you know what? I want to complicate things and just sort of dilute my base of people following me, because, you know, I just don't want too many people following me, do I? Just like keep it in two separate spaces, you know, just even it out a little bit, balance. So look, Winter Dominus, Winter Phonander, that is the same person, that is me. And you can also go to Facebook and like the Comedy Defect podcast page, like that, and you can join the Comedy Defect podcast group. You can join that as well. Basically, I just post the podcast up there and also gig dates if I've got something coming up, just sort of like, oh, hey, look, guys, I've got this coming up. Would you like to come and see it? And so look, that's all that stuff, really. And if you like this podcast enough and you want to buy me a coffee, you can go to Patreon, type in the Comedy Defect podcast and donate as much or as little as you feel this podcast is worth. But look, you know, don't bother, it's okay, I can buy my own coffee, it's grand. So like it, but if you can't do that, you can share your favorite episode, or just don't bother. Just don't tell anyone about it, because it's your secret between you and me. It's a little thing, little secret thing. Don't tell anyone about it, okay? Just, you know, just don't do that. Don't, you know, get your favorite episode, put it in a little vault and save it. Put a password on the hard drive and just keep it there forever. Because as they say in Indiana Jones, they will be found. You won't. But yeah, so look. But if you want to share it, tell your friends about it and, you know, break this little weird kind of secret we've got kind of going on. Don't tell anyone. Break it up. You know, you can do that and tell your friends, because it tells people where we are and what we're up to if you want to do that. But if you don't bother. But look, that's it for this intro. Wow, that's over 4 minutes. Jesus. Okay, look, this is episode 109 with the excellent comedian that she is, Callie Beaton. Enjoy. Callie Beaton, thanks for spending the next hour with me. Welcome to the Comedy Defect. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm not as cold as you because you've just said you're in a shed and I am in a house made of bricks and mortar.
Very nice.
So, yes, I'm probably happier than you right now.
That's fine.
You talk very quickly and try to do this in 20 minutes and then play it back a third of the speed. That might be the answer.
That's a really good idea. Keep it just short and sweet, you know, like a fringe show. Don't go for 40 minutes because it gets boring after that, right? Keep the energy up. That's what I'm all about, you know? Otherwise, they're just kind of starting to go, okay, he's asked that question twice now. I mean, I don't know why he's asked me how I am four times. I mean, I've already said I'm fine. Look, fuck, he's not going to milk any more out of this. It's like getting blood out of a stone. So saying that, what have you been up to? How are you getting on with the last couple of years and everything?
Well, the last couple of years, it feels like they're in two installments, really, the year before the pandemic and the year since the pandemic started. Yeah. So, yeah, because I don't think we've probably seen each other. Probably is a couple of years
at least.
That we last gigged together.
Yeah, I think so. Oh, remember? Do you remember the last one?
I feel like it was possibly, was it in Buckinghamshire somewhere?
Do you know what? I think you have it right. I think we're both in the same place. I think there's that private secondary school, I think it was, wasn't it?
Yes. Oh, yes. You know, I was thinking of somewhere else, but yes, you're right. Oh, gosh, that was a weird gig.
That was. What's his name? Gattis Candis closed the gig. I was in the middle. I think you opened. I was in the middle section.
I end up doing lots of gigs in schools. I don't know why. People maybe think because I've got kids. They're like, oh, yeah, you're a parent. You'll know what parents think's funny. I've spent many hours in hallowed halls that are far grander than anywhere that might. Because that was a posh school, if I remember rightly.
Very much so. Very, very posh indeed. They had their own parking. You know what I mean? Like not just, it looked like a Tesco's car park. It was all lined. And it wasn't just like a bit on the side on like various places where they could fit it in. It was properly dedicated areas, you know, where they could park whatever car they wanted. Obviously.
I don't like the fact you said Tesco's car park. I think for listeners, it's better if you said Downton Abbey.
Okay, sorry.
Like Downton Abbey. Yeah. It was like, if you don't mind making it seem a bit more like.
Yeah, that's right.
Then we seem a bit more successful, don't we? Which is really the point of this whole thing.
That's true. I mean, let's go up. I'll cut it out and put Waitrose in there. How's that better? Is that better? More like a Waitrose car park.
Waitrose better. I mean, it is.
Yeah.
Okay, well, in your world, between Downton Abbey and Tesco's is Waitrose.
Fine.
Yeah, yeah. That's fine. We'll go. That is the midpoint.
The stepping stone. Great. So you get booked to these school gigs and like, you know, because you're not particularly clean, are you? So, I mean, how does that, do you just go, oh, okay, and it's going fine?
I mean, I feel I need to say I bathe regularly, so that's what I mean, my hygiene is good. But no, I mean, it's funny, I don't think I'm that, I mean, I can do a clean set.
Yeah.
I did one the other night for a thing, a charity thing.
Yeah.
But yes, I suppose I did, when I go dirty, I go dirty. So
right.
I suppose mine's more kind of, there's lots more sort of hinting and innuendo than outright C-bombing.
Right, yeah.
As you know, but yes, I mean, I do have to, now luckily after a few years at this, got enough material that if it's really clear that they don't want a certain type of thing, I have the capacity to go, oh, I won't do so much of that. But yes, I can't remember what I did that night because obviously I can't remember what I did yesterday. But I do remember we all had a very fun time together. I do remember that.
It was fun.
A nice natter back. I say backstage. What would backstage have been? Like a stationary cupboard?
There was like a sort of, it was a stationary cupboard / like a PE kit area, I think, with like tables and stuff in the back there. And the guy who was running it was Steve Owen Williams. And he had, what's his name? The guy who does all the prosthetic stuff. Barry from Watford. That's one of his characters. And he does the other guy,
what's he called?
Oh, I can't remember his name now. He's been around for years.
This is like a conversation in an old people's home, isn't it? You know, him with the wig, with the shoes, yes. You know.
At least we're not kind of like arguing about the days and what time it was and what we had to eat then that night as well.
We're going to get to that.
Slowly.
We just haven't done that yet.
I remember I only had like one set at the time and I did like some horrific, horrible stuff in the middle and I think the parents were going, oh, there are kids here. Oh, I asked Steve, are there going to be kids here? And I'm like, yes, there are some children here. It's like, okay, what are they doing? They're the ushers, if like the parents were looking at the kids going, my kid's here, my kid is still here. That was it. But
I remember that they were teenagers, weren't they? Like what, like 14, 15 year olds,
that's
kind of thing, if I remember. That's the worst thing, isn't it? I have that with them. I don't know if you find this with Zoom gigs, but my worst nightmare with Zoom gigs are when people have their kids there, and even if the promoter or the MC says, you know, can't stop you having your kids there, but this is for adults. But what people don't realize, unless you are a comic, is that it's all very well everyone saying this is for adults and, you know, you have your kids there, it's your problem. But we all know as people who perform that as soon as there are kids there, everyone else gets really awkward if you say anything rude. So it's not whether the kids mind or their parents mind,
but
it just stifles the whole atmosphere. So I've had so many gigs where, you know, little kids are bouncing in and out and you're thinking, I just cannot say the stuff I would say because everybody else is going to find this so embarrassing. So that's a problem with the Zoom world is that you really don't know who's watching, do you?
The worst thing that's happened at your Zoom gigs?
Well, actually, weirdly, I've started to wonder whether I should just always be a Zoom comedian. I quite like Zoom gigging because I always quite like sort of presenting. And I come from a sort of telly media background. And I see it more like, rather than trying to do what you do on a stage in a, in a normal club, I see it more as doing I think about, what would Stephen Colbert try and do as a monologue on The Late Show? So I sort of do it a bit differently. And I weirdly feel more comfortable doing it.
Yeah.
But I tell you, I do lots of corporates. So I get booked as a kind of keynote speaker and after dinner speaker a lot. They often don't list me as a comedian. I ask them not to so that I can then reveal the fact I'm a comedian. So they book me as a kind of business person, all the stuff I've done before. And I was doing this one, it was from, I can't remember who it was, but it was like a global finance company. And there were like 4,000 people watching around the world.
Yeah.
And I was doing my speech live via whatever medium it was, Zoom or whatever. Actually, it wasn't Zoom. That was the problem. It was some complicated system they'd asked me to use.
Oh, okay.
And they'd given me like the software. And in theory, it was all looking really good, but it was alien territory for me. I hadn't done it. Anyway, then a Windows update came up on my screen. And of course, I had some slides showing. So then I thought, oh shit. So I literally went, oh fuck. And because I thought my feed had gone down. So I'm like, oh fuck. And I'm looking and I'm clicking. And after about what felt like about a minute, probably it was 10 seconds, the tech guy said, is everything all right, Kelly? I said, can you still see me? And he went, yes, and we can hear you.
Oh, no.
I realised that all that had happened was the Windows update, because I'm a moron. The Windows update obviously was showing on my screen, but didn't mean they couldn't see me from my camera.
Yeah.
So that was, I'm so
funny.
Normally quite technically able. And I just thought, how could I have made such a rookie error? And obviously the last thing you do is start swearing. Yeah. So I then had to get back in. It was about, I think it was like an hour long speech and I'd
about 10 minutes.
So I had to do another like 40 odd minutes knowing this had happened and not being able to see anyone's faces, because obviously when you do these things, you can't see your audience. You're
That's
just
right.
blind. So that was definitely the worst one I've had. So it wasn't funny.
Oh no.
And wasn't cool. Yeah.
So like the you're doing slides, you're using slides in your, presentations for the Zoom gigs.
Only not comedy ones, no. So just if I do a keynote or something, I have a few, and I don't use them all the time, but I will have some slides now and again, but not. I never have any writing on. I'm a believer of having the odd image behind you, so I don't use words. I don't sort of, but I know. But sadly for comedy, I'm still going old school and have sort of a backdrop that looks vaguely like I'm in a club. And
oh, quite nice.
Phone, which is connected, but looks like it is.
Right.
And I try and sort of embrace that, because some people do comedy. Are you doing many?
I've got one coming up on Sunday, which my wife nearly skinned me for, because, you know, of course, the day is 14th of February.
Day.
Yeah. But I thought, it's 20 minutes, starting. Like, you know, I can stop giving you attention for 20 minutes. And she's like, no. Okay, well.
That's a very romantic approach.
Yeah. So, she's really, present the flowers is fine. It's good. We're ready. It's hidden somewhere. And so in case things go badly, I'll break glass and give it to her. But it's like I'm talking about the flowers and the presents.
So you're breaking it. It's not your first Zoom gig, I take it.
No, I've only done like about maybe, I'm not going to lie to you, I've done about maybe 4 Zoom gigs at this stage. And like the first couple I did at the beginning of lockdown, and I was, you know, just like, oh, fine, whatever. And I was talking about some stuff, which was like about the lockdown and just fed it in. And you know how sometimes, you know, because it's gone on for such a long time, I've looked at that gig and in retrospect and gone, oh, maybe I shouldn't have talked about that. That seems a little bit callous and, you know, misjudged, you know, because just the stuff I was talking about, it's going to be over in like 6 months. We could be out of this. It'd be fine. Yeah, maybe it was a little more serious than I thought. So,
but hindsight's a marvellous thing. And as we're seeing with the impeachment trial over in the US, even if you say something outright, that the whole world sees and hears. You can just unsay it a little bit later and say, no, I never said that. So you're fine. We're all absolutely free. I know we don't want to get too political. But
fine. I don't mind where it goes, Callie.
Your words can't come back and haunt you. We're in a world where that officially is not a thing anymore.
So anyway, tell me about your conspiracy theories.
I saw something, a comedian, I can't remember which comedian it was, posting it. Okay, I'm at that point in the pandemic. What's your favourite conspiracy theory?
Yeah.
So I did go and get a coffee. This in itself is not an interesting story.
Go on.
But I went and got a coffee at a local little coffee place that I really like, people that I've known forever, that I've always enjoyed talking to. And I went in to get my takeaway coffee. And they were sort of saying, oh, the police are being really difficult about us at the moment. And they're saying that if people gather outside our cafe, you know, they can fine us. And I said, God, that's really unreasonable. You need to tweet about it. Anyway, it turned out that they are conspiracy theorists, anti-vaxxing COVID deniers, and they've been getting people to gather around the cafe in support of that. And, and sort of, why should we be shut down?
Like a protest.
And I was like, oh, yeah. And wow. I was like, oh, I don't, like a North London latte protest. And I thought, oh, I don't even want to get my coffee from you now. And meanwhile, I'm standing there with a mask. They're maskless. And they're saying that only a sort of sheep would wear a mask. And I was thinking, oh, I'm wearing a mask right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was, I felt a bit like the uncool kid at school. It was like, well, I'm here with my mask and my hand sanitizer, and you guys are telling me this thing doesn't exist.
That's right.
So, yeah.
That's the most middle class thing ever, isn't it? Like a coffee bar protest, isn't it, really? It's just like, right, okay, look, we're all going to have
contest. I am a sort of walking North London parent cliche, really. So yes, it was either have the protest outside the florist and coffee shop, or we were going to have to bring an Ocado driver. Yeah. Which we didn't know which to do. So we went for the flat white this protest.
I like my protest to be brought to me. I mean, like, you know, I mean, I really care about my values, but you know, as long as they're in the place that I want, so I can get my coffee and my flowers whenever I want. That's great. I love it.
And as long as there are no missing items when I'm trying to protest, then I'm very happy. So you realize, there are anti-vaxxers and conspiracy theorists on your doorstep.
Wow, that's crazy. Is,
what's it, where are you? I don't know where you're.
I live in Hemel Hempstead is where I am.
What's the vibe there? People like being, because I'm in Camden in London, and people, I know you know where Camden is, but it's, so people are being, you're seeing all sorts.
Okay, I've lived in this country for a few years, Callie. I've lived in this country for a few years. I get it. I know where Camden, that's in that London, isn't it? That's London, right. Okay. So I'm from a Cork, a place called Skibbereen.
Oh, you've made that up.
Yeah, it's true. I've made it up. I've just whipped it from the Alan Partridge, the woman who's in the hotel. That's that Graham Linehan. He lives in that imaginary place where I'm from as well. So it's a conspiracy.
So you're Hemel Hempstead.
That's right.
And how are people?
A couple of people that are just freaking out, but mostly people carrying on the BLM protest in Hemel Hempstead as well, like during the summer and all that. So it was just like, it was more or less the same. It just hadn't really changed, you know. And Hemel, really, people stay away from each other anyway.
I don't know. I'm not going near things. Well, here people are being, well, it sort of varies, but I'm a runner. So you as a dog, I mean, if you were here, and you're not that you're a dog, but you as a dog owner, if we were neighbours, we probably would hate each other. Because I think runners and dog owners and then families, I think they're the people who all hate each other. So the families walk like four or five abreast, and then everybody's them. And then the dog owners obviously have dogs, and sometimes the dogs might be slightly out of control.
Yeah.
But I do like dogs, even though I don't have a dog. So I'm like, well, fair play. The dogs need to be able to rummage around and forage for things. And then obviously everyone hates a runner, or they do in London because they see us as filthy, COVID exhaling, nasty pieces.
Do you wear a mask when you're running? Do you wear a mask?
I don't.
Balaclava?
I bag over my head. No. I just wear running clothes and trainers for a run. And the reason I don't wear a mask, which might seem very selfish, is because obviously you're breathing quite heavily when you're running and it must be very unpleasant in a mask. But what I do is I avoid people. Like, I'll go miles out of the way of people, even if that means running in a road. People just, honestly, they see you coming as a runner and everyone just hates you so much.
Yeah.
And you don't get thanked. You nearly get taken out by a dust truck trying to get away from people. That you don't get thanked. It's a really thankless task.
No, in fairness,
a runner in North London.
In fairness, like in Hemel, I do run as well. Have you had any injuries because of the extra running you've been doing, or have you been okay?
I'm always a fairly avid runner, so it's kind of like the pandemic. I always needed this pandemic to happen so I could be like, yeah, well, my choice of sport was always very pandemic appropriate.
Yeah.
I did have COVID though at the start.
Oh, right.
I was really ill. I ended up getting pneumonia. So I had about 2 months off grid about this time last year.
Yeah.
And then when I went back to running after that, God, you did say I didn't need to be funny, but I'm really pushing that description. I'm like, I'm really not going to be funny. I'm just going to come at this like it's like a bit of therapy. And
it's
I'm
great. No,
you look, and your listeners
do you know
despairing.
What? Do you know what, right? I can, it's okay. It just makes me look funnier. But like,
yeah, that's true. I can do that. I can definitely make you look funnier.
I'll come off this, Kelly. Oh, great, great. I'll come off this podcast and be like, smash that podcast. Honestly, I don't know what happened with Pat Kelly, but you know, she opened badly. I mean, I luckily I was there at the end and, you know, just brought it home.
I'm a very bad warm up act for you at the moment. But
that's
yes,
great.
I so in line with my boring yeah. running nerdism, so when I first started running after I attacked,
are you an Essex?
It was a bit difficult.
Yeah.
The running.
Yeah, it was so the lung capacity. Do you have asthma as well?
What, do I look like I've got asthma? Are you just throwing a whole load of things my way now?
I'm just saying how sad your life is. I want to make me feel better today. That's what I want. That's all I want.
Why don't you ask me what colour inhaler I use?
Yeah, well, please. Oh, what colour inhaler you got? You got a red one. You got. Oh,
I may have.
Oh, God, that's brilliant. You're nearly dead.
Exactly.
Oh, God, isn't that brilliant? So much joy. This is great. I mean, this is really helping me. I mean, this is generally this podcast I usually get comics on to make, like, to check in and see how you're getting on. And you're doing terribly. So you're making my life feel great, honestly. It's just that.
Great. And it's good to have it summed up. You're doing, how would you describe how I'm doing? Terribly. Oh, thank you very much.
No, thank you. Good night. It's been great. So was that great having you on?
And it's Friday afternoon we're recording this, so I'm trying to get a little bit happy for the weekend, no gigs, trying to feel better about that.
No,
and
fine.
You just brought me crashing.
That's great. And it is also Valentine's Day coming up as well. Oh, what a brilliant time to be alive. Oh my God, this is great. I'm sorry. Anyway, sorry, but what inhaler do you have? Got a red one? You've got a red one or like
I was... No, I've got a blue one.
Oh,
blue,
yeah.
And I've got a brown one.
Oh,
I've
yeah.
only got the brown one because they gave it to me when I had that there COVID.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I've still got, maybe I should have thrown it away, but they gave me the steroid one.
Oh yeah.
So yes, I mean, I think we've pit of unfunny gloom
no,
and doom.
I think
here.
It's fine.
Can we go further?
I kind of got jealous. My brother had asthma before I had asthma. I was kind of jealous of his attention. And so I was like, and he got one of the red inhalers. And I was like, oh, you got a red one. I want a red inhaler. It's like, I'm literally wishing my health away, you know? But like a few years later.
What is the red one? I don't think I even know what it is.
It's a super steroid one. It's like, it's white, you know, because I know the blue one's a Ventolin, of course. And, you know, this is, we're like talking about it, like, so it's like a whiskey, isn't it? So it's aged in a barrel for like about maybe 40 years. And the brown one is the one that you just have because the doctor tells you this is much better. It doesn't alleviate the symptoms immediately. Does it in bit by bit? Like, and I just said, no, I want an instant relief from, like, you know, struggling with breathing. So the Ventolin is one you always reach for. The brown one is like, what do I want that for? You know, it's just, it's, what is it like? It's like the little, what would it be? Like if it was cutlery, it would be, it would be just like
big
that.
Grapefruit spoon.
Yeah, yes. Or the fish knife. No one ever gets that.
That's a 1970s. So a grapefruit spoon. We all have those in the 70s.
Little baller.
Obviously a small girl. Do you, I like the idea of all the colour-coded things because like Viagra's blue. That's what you read. I wonder if they'll end up with like a red Viagra, brown, like the brown Viagra. Could you just take that in the days leading up? And that would mean you never needed the blue Viagra.
Yeah.
I think there's some, you can tell I'm dating an older gentleman, but this is where my mind's immediately gone. I'm like, oh, I wonder how this might help my sex life.
Yeah, just working up to it. You know, that's it. Just like a little breath. Yeah, just take your pills. Okay, great. Yeah, this will help. Okay, right now. I don't think I should have one. I mean, what would you have? Like a, would you have a, the brown one give you a semi for the entire week? And then you say, I don't know what would you top it? I don't know. I don't know how this works.
Yeah, you'd be almost ready to semi erect for a week. Although the trouble is brown. I mean, having to get a brown pill is a very unsexy thing, isn't it?
Yeah,
if
that's
you,
true.
If you drop your kind of flask of brown pills,
yeah,
it just looks very But yes, and then the red. What would the red pill would be? Yeah, that's hard to know, wouldn't it? Maybe that's what you have for your last ever shag.
Yeah,
you're in the old folks' home. They're like, you got
that's
one
it.
Last blast.
Yeah,
take a red pill and fill your
poo. That's it. Then you just like it's like it just it feels like a montage from Batman, you know, that your partner has to like literally strap themselves to the bed so they just don't fly off anywhere, and you just go, right, it's red pill time.
I think talking about during a pandemic, I think it's important to make jokes about sex in old people's homes. I mean, I think we've really hit the we're noticing the
nail in the coffin.
We're reading this very, very well. So yeah, I think tonally we've got this, to be honest.
That's it. I think I love it. Nothing wrong with a bit of gallows humour, really nothing at all. I did not know this about you, Kelly. You won the Piccadilly Comedy Club New Comedian of the Year in 2017.
I mean, it's not exactly like discussing my BAFTA win, is it? But let's go with
hey,
it.
It's a win.
It is a win.
A win's a win.
I'm always the, as you may or may not know, I'm always the bridesmaid, never the bride in life, but also. So I did, when I started out, I did really well in like all the competitions going, and I would get to the final of everything going, and then I would absolutely balls up the final. So it was, I just kept getting finalist credits and semi-finalist credits. Yeah. And then when the stakes were high, I would absolutely screw it up. And that particular thing, which it feels like, well, it is ages ago now, isn't it? It's whatever it is. I think it actually, I think you win it in December. So I think I actually did only win it just over 2 years ago. But anyway, it was between Christmas and New Year. And I virtually forgot I was even doing it. And I hadn't gigged for like 2 or 3 weeks. And there were some really good people in it. And I so turned up thinking, well, I know I haven't got a cat in hell's chance. So I'm just going to have a nice gig. And it goes to show that's obviously when you do better, because I was very relaxed. And I was just absolutely sure I wasn't a contender. So I thought, oh, this would just be a nice between Christmas and New Year gig.
Lovely.
Yeah. So, you know, I like the fact you pick that as my career highlights, but let's go with it. Whatever it is. New act of the year.
That's brilliant. I mean you've also been on Mock the Week and like all these sort of things as well. You've done loads of telly, haven't you?
I've done bits of telly. I mean, the last telly I did was a bit under a year ago. I did a QI episode before. It was one of the last ones. I don't think they had full audience. I think it was literally just before last lockdown, because this season they're doing it with a remote audience. So all via screens, but they did still have a real audience, but it wasn't a packed audience, I think, if I remember rightly. The trouble is at the moment that this is a very boring thing to say, but I'll just keep going. But the thing is that because everyone's stuck at home, everybody at every level of our industry, everybody's doing stuff that's probably a level below what they'd normally do. So you can get really massive names to do stuff on radio and telly that isn't normally something they'd consider, because they're kind of grounded.
Yeah.
So what that means is that everybody like me, suddenly everyone gets sort of pushed a level down during the pandemic, because they sort of work through their booking lists. So it's been much harder this year. I mean, luckily I do other things as well as comedy, so I've been lucky to sort of make a sort of living, but the comedy kind of show busy radio telly stuff's been much harder. So bits and pieces going on. It was going to be a big year for me last year. Really interesting things about to happen, and obviously they all got cancelled. So I feel I've got a big old pause button on bits of my career. But I don't know, do you, what do you do? You obviously are a comedian, but what else? What
I
else
work
does
in
your working life comprise?
I loads of voiceovers and bits in between, trying to just build up the CV, you know, because after comedy went, I was like, right, go fully at acting and the VOs, and it's going okay, you know. I mean, that's it, you know. I mean, my face fits for some things, it doesn't for others, but it's a real lesson in patience and also being humble with all that, you know. It just really really helped me through it, really, because the rejection in comedy, I took it really personally at the beginning, and I was like, oh god damn it, you know, even with the audiences sometimes, you know, when they wouldn't go well, I'd really take it really personally. But after a few years now, and especially with this stuff too, it took me a while to kind of get my feet, and I say last year I was like, oh, I feel I'm ready now. You know, and it's like, no, you're not. No,
you've been waiting for this pandemic the whole life.
God, that's it. Finally, you know, it's really working out for me. I mean, I've been the
moment has come.
Yeah, weirdly, I've been the busiest this year, trying to get loads of other things in the pipeline. But also say, with the pandemic, like with yourself, all the stuff is concertina now. So like, I'm applying for things and I'm like, yeah, great, okay, I get it. But then I'm like, where am I going to put this? You know, I mean, in a good, you know, complaining about having other things to do, but it's like, where's the other stuff going to pop up, you know? And you feel like, okay, it becomes like a menacing amount of work that seems to be sneaking up on you gradually. Do you know what I mean? Because you're not sure when it's going to happen, but you know it's going to happen. But, you know, you're booking other things too, just because you're trying to keep the momentum going.
I know. No, I keep having that. And I keep thinking, how long am I going to be doing other? Because, you know, you kind of hustle here and you hustle there. And I think I'm doing stuff that I love doing. You know, everything I'm doing in my working life is good fun. The bit I keep thinking, I'm writing a book at the moment.
Oh, great.
And it's just thought I'd throw that in there. But what I really sensibly should be doing right now is just literally going, right, I'm going to take 6 months and just write the book. That's it. But then I sort of think, oh, but I've got to keep some money coming in.
Yeah.
I don't want to completely lose touch with this, that and the other. So consequently, you end up, you do make kind of weird creative. And because I only sort of fully reinvented as a comic quite late in life. And I'm like, God, I'm not ready to reinvent into something else. I've only got so many bloody reinventions left in me. So it's kind of like I've got to stick with this one. I went big with this one. So I'm looking forward to it all opening up again, that's for sure. Aren't you missing the I've just realized all the stuff I used to complain about, like, you know, this time on a Friday, I'd very likely be getting in a car and driving to a private school in Buckinghamshire and going, oh, I've got to be there for 5:30. But now I'm like, oh, I used to quite like that. And sort of seeing people that you don't normally see all the time. And I miss it a lot. Yeah,
the camaraderie and the, like, you know, all your mates around you. It's like, and, you know, you're doing a gig, even when it goes bad, you're just like, yeah, great, we've got a story. You know, there's that extra adrenaline that you just can't do anything with. Even with the Zoom gigs as well, you do the gig, you go back, you're in your house. You're like, what do I do with this now? What do I do with all this energy? You know what I mean? It's, oh, great, okay, I'll go back to the washing up. Dies with
it. It's the weirdest thing, isn't it? And when you do, I'm really, like, depending, some of the things I've done here have been quite high-stakes stuff. I say here, sitting in my house. And some of it's been kind of low-key stuff. But it's the weirdest thing. I hosted an awards thing a couple of months ago, and Ricky Gervais was doing it, and George Takei was doing it.
Wow,
and it was
like a big amazing.
It had lots of big names. And I literally, because it wasn't, and they were filming it and, you know, to circulate afterwards as well. So it was live, but then it was also going to be available to stream. And so I'm all dressed up. I've got my fake eyelashes on, my lovely heels, my dress. I've set up my whole studio I work in. I've got it all set up looking like a TV studio. And then about 10 minutes before we were due to go live, I was like, this is so bloody weird. I'm literally sitting there having a row with my son about, you know, not having run the dishwasher and, you know, the cat pissed on the doormat. And now I've got to go in and be like, hey, you know, welcome to the Finger Awards. And I just thought it's such a weird thing, because there's something about the ritual, isn't there, of driving somewhere and being backstage, in our case, in a stationary cupboard, and chatting with people, and then seeing the MC on stage and looking at the audience, and it all gets you ready to perform. And obviously, we're just doing it from a standing start all the time at the moment. Have you done any drive-in gigs in between?
I haven't had the chance. Have you done those?
Yeah, driving gigs are really quite... I did the last one I did before the most recent lockdown was in a brewery car park in Leighton Buzzard. It was for James Lillis. He does lovely gigs. So it was at some kind of Leighton Buzzard brewing company. So I was out there. Yeah, it was like a cross between a gig and dogging. It was a very interesting experience in a brewery car park. And the worst thing is at drive-in gigs, if people don't like it, they just turn their engine on and drive off. So it's quite difficult to heckle. Not much to say to that one. So it's a bit of a weird. I would like to know if that didn't happen to me. It's just a really weird thing. So I've done... Yeah, outdoor ones I've done, which are fine. They just feel like doing like a festival.
That's right. That's nice.
And then I've done drive-in ones. And then the ones I think are even harder, and I'm sure you've done them, are the socially distanced ones in normal venues. So like I did one at the Stratford-upon-Avon like theatre. So it's quite a big theatre. Mm-hmm. And they had sold it out in a socially distanced way, which meant it was about 25% full and everybody was spread out. And so everybody was in these kind of raked seats.
Yeah.
And at least normally you could have played to the first four rows and you could have seen them. Yeah. But obviously the first four rows only had like 18 people scattered across them. So you're playing to a massive room and no one's close enough to get a sort of real head of steam of laughter. And I was like, I mean, it was just lovely to do it. I was really pleased to be doing it because I've missed it so much. It's not an easy way to get laughs. I really learned to kind of pace myself on Zoom and if I'm getting the big laughs, even if it's one where everyone's on mute. Mm. So I really try to kind of own it, wait. Because I also think if you do give them time to laugh, it's even more likely if they're at home.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, a bit more self-conscious because they're with their partner or their kids.
Yeah.
And then you give them a really clear cue, like, I've stopped, I'm smiling, I look like there should be a laugh. I think maybe, so I try and really own Zoom gigs, like I'm having the best time of my life and like everything's landing. Yeah. And it's really probably one of the stages of insanity I'm describing. It's just like talking to myself and pretending there's an adoring crowd, loving every minute.
Yeah. Do you prop stuff or bring any of that stuff in, or just like just microphone and just...
Just my
dead
microphone,
eyes there.
My fake microphone. Yeah. At the beginning, I did bring in, I had a few bits of material about like stupid hobbies and stuff. And I was like baking and sewing. And I had a few things I was trying to do with showing stuff I was doing. And then I thought, no, there's a reason I was a Blue Peter presenter. I need to stop this now.
Yeah.
And just do stand up. But it does help me because I have to rearrange, like you in your shed.
Yeah.
I've got a room where I do all this stuff and I sort of rearrange it depending what I'm doing. If I need a certain backdrop and there's something about physically lugging like lights and microphones around the room and setting up an area to do it that I think that is now my little commute to the gig when I'm sort of like, okay, this is happening now and I'm getting into this space. I know it sounds pathetic. So me moving a lamp, a ring light across the room, I'm like, oh, this is my little Stanislavskian ritual and I'm ready to go on stage now. It's all got rather pitiful winter, I think.
You're saying you took some stuff up, like hobbies and stuff during the lockdown. What is the thing the main thing. What have you been doing? Tell me, I'm interested.
Well, it's you won't be once I tell you. I can completely squash that interest flat. What I'm going to tell you.
Great.
Baking. So I'm an all right baker. I'm not a great cook, but I can bake. Okay, so I got into baking, but then I got into eating all the stuff I've baked. I was like, oh, that's not great.
But
so
you're running. Like, you're running
so
though.
Then I needed to get back in. Yeah, then I needed to get more into the running because I've been doing the baking, which was good. Yeah. And then a little bit of gardening, which I grew tomato plants, again, very boring. Everyone was doing it, but I got very competitive about them. And then I also, my daughter, my youngest, was stuck in Amsterdam. So for the benefit of listeners, she is 20. I didn't leave like a four-year-old in Amsterdam on her own. But they shut the borders pretty quickly there when it all hit. So she was stuck there for months.
Wow.
I might say, in a safe, warm, secure location. But we took up, we were doing stitch and bitch. So we were each doing cross stitch and then we would call each other and we would sew and we would talk. So it's a bit like when you're in the car and you're not looking at each other and you have good conversations.
Great.
We'd just be together sort of chatting away and sewing like a pair of ladies from a Jane Austen novel. So I told you I could really dampen down your enthusiasm.
No, look, honestly, I'll tell you this.
Has that done it?
You're absolutely fine. You're absolutely fine. I in the summer, I was like, look, I got in the shed. I got a load of stuff, and I was like, right, I need to organise this. The beginning of this was my bin lid. I've aged like fucking 20 years in this lockdown. My bin lid broke off, right, with a bit of wind. And then that's not a euphemism. And so
You've aged more than 20 years.
I screwed it back on.
You've gone full tilt.
Oh, man, I'm full Victor Mildrew now. That's where I am. One fucking foot in the grave, man, I swear. And so, I put the, I screwed the lid back on and with the bolts and stuff. And I took a picture of it. I put that on Facebook and I was like, didn't have to get a new one. And then Chris Deuce said, Winter, you need to join this Facebook group called Dumb Men's Facebook group, what it is, right? And some guys just put some lame stuff up like it. So I was right, I need to tidy my shed. Tidy the shed and got the daughter out and she was she helped me organize all the bolts, all the washers, all the things into like a tidy a thing, and she really enjoyed doing it. And I was like, great, this is, I nearly went one further than this and started labeling every fucking drawer in this 30 drawer tool tidy thing, you know. And
you've made me seem interested.
Yes, they go, look, I've got to give it back.
Dull.
energy circular.
There's a dull men's, I feel like I've dated a lot of dull men who are probably on Facebook, but I didn't know there was an actual collective.
Yeah, there's a group, there's a collective, in case you want to, you know, single or go there.
And it's tongue in cheek, is it? Yeah. It's not like they know they're dull.
So yeah, yeah, yeah.
I guess otherwise they wouldn't sign up to it.
That's right. That's it. It's called Dolma's group. But I took a picture before I tidied it and after, and some fucker put up there and said, which is the before? It's you fucking.
Oh, they are. Bitchy. My daughter would say
bitchy.
Salty.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a bit of salty.
It's a bit, it's
and
funny.
How would they know? Could I go in as, if I went as Callie Beaten and tried to get into the dumb
men's you'd be
Facebook
welcome.
Group. Is it one where would they let me in?
Yeah, they'd let you in. It's not gender specific. So you'd be fine. You get in there, it'd be grand. You could put anything up you like, you know, just do it. That's it. It'd be funny.
Goodness, I'm dull. I think on the dull type thing, I'm right. I think I'm streaks ahead of a lot of people already on there. It's just the man thing I might struggle with.
Yeah.
But that's okay. Well, I'm going to look that up.
Yeah, check it out. I'll send you an invite on Facebook. Was it? But so
good time.
Token man of 2021. That's what it'll be. You never know. You might win this award. And maybe there's an award. I don't know if there's awards. I think it's just more sadness. I think that's all it is.
They could make awards that you guys would all have, bolts of wood and bits of old nails.
It's
and
true.
A bit of old, milk bottle tops. I mean, if there's anyone who could make an award, it would be you guys on that group.
I think so. I think there should be a competition for the dullest award ever. You know, the actual trophy. It's like, okay, what is this? Right. Okay, we'll see. But so Callie, when did you start comedy?
I think it's about 5 years ago now, is it? 20, or maybe it's 6 years. 20, wow. 50, 6 years ago. Yeah, I started 6 years ago.
And you started doing comedy while you're working at Comedy Central?
I did, yes. And I'd worked at Comedy Central I'd worked in comedy for years. Mm. And the first time I'd worked with Comedy Central was about 20 odd years ago when they launched South Park. I worked on rolling out South Park around the world. Just thought I'd slip that in.
Great.
There. And then I worked, so I'd always worked in television on the sort of business side, really, sort of making money out of ideas. So people with good ideas would be looking for sort of ways to get them made. And then I would work with broadcasters and producers around the world to do that. Mm. So I did work with quite a few comedy production companies in the UK. And then I did end up doing quite a lot of work with Viacom, the parent company of Comedy Central. Mm. And I was there for 10 years prior to going full-time with comedy. And during that time, we would go to places like, you know, go to trade fairs in Cannes or Las Vegas or wherever, and we would bring on-screen talent with us. So we'd have like amazing names who'd come with us, but I was just the boring sort of business person. So I was in charge of that side of things, and that they'd come and we'd run industry events and stuff. Yeah. Joan Rivers came to a couple of those things with us, and I got to know her reasonably well because we'd like host dinners, and when I was her sort of main kind of contact while we were there.
Great.
And I would introduce her to the stage when we did events with her. And she was the one who said to me the last time I saw her, which was not long before she died. And she said to me, you should do stand up, Callie. You know, the sort of thing I've seen you do. It's kind of like you're doing 5 minute sets. And I, at the time, I said, you know, Joan, I'm 45. You know, I've got this job. I've got two kids. I'm a single mum. My son's autistic. My life is complicated and it's too late. And she said, I'm 81, Callie, you're going to look back at this and you're going to go, why didn't I do it? So obviously she said it with an American accent, but I'm no good at accents. so it took an 81 year old woman telling a 45 year old woman, as I then was, that that you're still quite young.
Brilliant.
And actually that is such a good I know you're younger than me, but it's such a good thing to be told, because we always think at every stage in our life, we look back and go, if only I'd done that then when I was young. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in 20 years, I'll look back at myself now and go, God, I was so young.
Yeah.
Why didn't I do stuff? So, it took her sort of saying that, really. I'd always wanted to do stuff like that, but I just thought it was too late. Thank God someone way older than me told me it wasn't.
And it's great when someone that experienced and that brilliant sees faith in you and gives you that little bit of a, you know, confidence boost, right?
And for all I know, she was just being an arse licker because she knew that I was kind of responsible for getting the show made.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm just going to say whatever it's going to take to get this woman to believe in my show. But either way, I was like, oh, Joan Rivers thinks I'm a genius. I mean, she definitely had no reason to think I had any talent, that's for sure, because she hadn't really seen me do very much. But I think she probably realised that I loved comedy and she probably thought, you know, you should get into it if you want to. I've finally been watching The Marvellous Mrs. Maisel. Have you watched it on Amazon? It's brilliant. It's about a woman who in the 60s, a sort of young American housewife in the 60s, who ends up taking up stand-up. And everyone's been telling me I should watch it for years, and I didn't. And I finally got into it now. I would thoroughly recommend it.
Check it out.
She's obviously, everyone's like, you know, there are so many parallels. And I look at her, I'm like, no, she's 27. She's beautiful and talented. And not quite so many. But yeah, she did unexpectedly take up stand-up. So I did get into it really late, I guess, most people. Because how old were you when you...
I first gigged when I was 23, but I didn't do a lot of gigs. I didn't do a lot of gigs, though. I did like about 30 gigs, and then I just, life got in the way. I just didn't have enough money to pursue it, you know? And I just kind of tried to just make some money in those years in my 20s. Didn't work out trying to like make enough money, kept trying to make more money, do you know what I mean? And then kind of came back to it when I came back to the UK, because I thought, well, this is the place to get better because there's so many gigs nearby. In Ireland, it's like you have to drive far for gigs and you just can't get better as quickly, you know?
The nice thing about being, especially where I am in North London, God, there's so many gigs around here. I do... In normal times, I probably do 5 or 6 gigs within 10 minutes of my front door every week.
Great.
And then if I have to, you know, if I've got to get the tube for 20 minutes, I'm like, oh, I've got a long way to go to that gig. I'm really very lucky being here under normal circumstances. Couldn't be better, really, for just cutting your teeth and doing the open mic stuff. But when I started, my kids were still, you know, my daughter, I think, was 14 when I first gigged. They were at an age where I didn't need to get a babysitter for them anymore.
Brilliant.
But I still didn't want to have to, like, I wouldn't have been shopping across the country at night because I also still had a day job.
Yeah.
So it really suited me that I could see them, give them their tea, whiz out for a gig, get home. It sort of worked out doing it as a single mum kind of because it was easy. I couldn't have done it if I'd had to travel for miles.
But it's got
to
be easy and you got to be energised and like in the ready to go, you know, rather than like driving for hours and hours and hours, you know. You know, like I said, there's a limit, isn't there? You know, about three, four hours driving is just not good. Good, really, to make it have a good gig.
Also knowing you've got to drive back again.
Yeah.
I think if there's one thing, I mean, I'm sure you've spoken to loads of comics since this whole thing happened, and I think there definitely will be anyone who was a bit of a fair weather comedian's going to have given up, because anyone who didn't really know why they were doing it or wasn't sure they should be doing it, this would be enough to make you not bother. But I think lots of us, those of us who do really feel passionate about carrying on, I still think that definitely now think, you know what, there are some gigs I was traveling across the country for, you know, for like 50 quid in my pocket, and it was taking up 8 hours of my Friday night, and I just think, you know, I probably won't want to do those anymore, because it hasn't affected me not doing them. You know, I'm glad I did them in the years I've been going, and that I've thrown my hat in the ring for everything, but I'm still, you know, I still absolutely love comedy and I can't wait to be doing it regularly. But there are some gigs now, I think, you know what, I've also quite enjoyed having the odd Friday night where I can actually have dinner with my boyfriend, or not just live for comedy, which is kind of how my life had got before the pandemic.
It's insidious, isn't it? It just doesn't stop. But you're like, this would be good for this. Okay, relax. There's no pause button for comedy, really. This has been the only one.
And it's addictive, isn't it? Like it's kind of like a sort of, you don't really have time to question it. And also you're putting gigs in your diary so far ahead of when you're doing the gig. So it's not like when I say yes to stuff, I don't ever kind of look at that week in February in 6 months' time and go, oh, bloody hell, I've got 9 gigs that week. I just think, I just keep saying yes. And then when you come to actually living that, you're like, shit, this is not much fun. And you don't enjoy gigs when you gig that many times a week. What do you think I think 3 or 4 gigs a week is about definitely where I'd like to be again once this ends.
Definitely. That's just like a nice, you've got time to just, you know, take a step back and see what, how it went, and put something else in if you want, you know, rather than just like, you just feel like you're never at home. You know, it's just especially
because have you got young kids?
No, mine are just, one's 15, the other one is left home, which is good.
So they want you out of the house. They're like, that's it.
They just get the fuck out of here. You know, that's it. They don't want me around at all. They can use it. They can watch what they want on TV.
Actually want us to go on a world tour. They're like, why don't you become really successful and just piss off for 6 months and let us out of the house?
That's right.
That's the sweet spot for them.
So you were a presenter as well before that. You were saying you were like for Blue Peter. Is that right? You said.
No, I didn't do. No, I did. I mean, years and years ago when I first left, I went to drama college and I did some bits and bobs. But I mean, really going back through the annals of time, and luckily that stuff isn't online or anything as it would be now. No, I just used to do lots of public speaking and kind of presenting things in the industry and stuff. Yeah. So I guess I was, by the time I started stand up, I was very used to being in command of like a room with a microphone. So I was, but it's really different, as you know, the difference between being a corporate person who happens to be funny and then being someone who's paid to be funny is enormous. So you can really clean up if you've got a day job and you happen to be a decent, funny speaker with a normal job, because everyone's like, oh my God, you're hilarious. But try putting that person on stage at the Comedy Store and they won't be funny at all. So I think the reason I did well in competitions, albeit I always fucked them up at the last hurdle, but the reason I did well early on, I think, is because my stagecraft seemed quite polished. I think people thought I seemed like quite a solid act. But of course, what I didn't have, because no one does at the start, I didn't have enough of a voice or material. So my stagecraft is way better than my capacity as a comedian. And I think I think it's the same for everyone. It's sort of, you find your actual level on the circuit. So some people go really quickly at the beginning and other people take a long time to get anywhere. And then I think after sort of a few years, you start to find out, where am I actually in terms of my talent and where do I fit into this? Yeah. And I definitely had to work really, and also I could hide behind my stage skills. So I was probably a bit lazier on writing material than some acts. And that really bites you in the arse. I mean, you've got to write and you've got to try shit. I was very risk averse. I was a very sort of polished comedian, which helps in a way. Yeah. But if you're determined to be polished from day one, you're not going to fuck up. And it's the fuck ups that make you funny, isn't it?
Yeah, totally.
That's what I tell myself.
You got to wear it with a nonchalance, isn't it? Just like throw it away. You know it, throw it away, isn't it? That's it. Just like, but you know, try. But then once you've tried, you know, then just you got to wear it with an irreverence, isn't it?
Well, they say you're never as good as your best gig or as bad as your worst gig, don't they? That's the saying. And I think that's really helpful, because it's really easy to take it, you know, when you really kind of blow the roof off to go, oh my God, I'm amazing. I should be, you know, I should be selling out stadiums. And then when you have a real stinker, you're like, well, you know, the audience was shit and the stage was shit and the MC didn't do it right. And obviously we all know, really, it's kind of on us, whether we do well or badly, we sort of have to take the rough with the smooth, don't we? You can't really just take the plaudits.
That's true.
Not that you or I have ever had a bad gig, but I mean, okay. Some people do.
If you had, tell us about your mediocre gig then. Like, what is your, like, give me
worst
an example.
Gig?
Yeah, the worst, the one that you're like, oh my God, what happened at this gig? Why? You know,
the one that I remember. I've had a few. I'd say I've probably got like a top 10-ish where I can really remember them, because they were bad enough I remember them. But one that really stands in my mind, and it's funny because I know quite a few of the people who are on the bill, and I think if they heard me saying this, they'd probably go, it wasn't as bad as you're saying, but it was bad. It was at Thruxton, and was sort of in a tent, you know, there like a few hundred people in a beer tent, and it was a really nice bill. Mark Simmons, I think, was on. It was some good people, I can't remember, but I ended up doing a lift share with a couple of people in my car. And we got there and I did the gig. I was sort of thinking, oh, it'd be loads of kind of like Formula One type sort of blokes, and they probably won't think I'm that funny. So I had all these preconceptions about who'd be there and what they'd think. Well, when I turned up, it was mainly women. It was loads of women there, which I don't know what difference that makes, but I hadn't thought about that. And they just absolutely fucking hated me. And I can't remember who was on ahead of me, but they blew the hay bales out of the tent. They were so funny. And then I got on the stage and they just hated me. And then they started talking about how much they hated me. So this group of really pissed women were just like, I made a joke about being a single parent. They were like, yeah, why don't you fuck off? You know, even your husband didn't want to hear you trying to tell jokes.
Wow.
And it got really personal.
God.
And instead of obviously most people wouldn't have even heard those women at the front. Instead of doing what one does is either like take out the hecklers or crack on anyway. Yeah. I just got quite upset and just was completely shit. And then at the end of it, the worst thing was I had to wait for the other people I'd given the lift to.
Oh, no.
One of them I think had been on and one of them hadn't been on. I had to wait and then do a really long journey home. But I then said, and again, I really can't remember who the act was, but one of the acts that was with me, because I said, oh, can we get out away from the tent, like some back way through the trees or something? I don't want anyone to see me.
Yeah.
I just want to get to my car unseen. And we couldn't work out a way to do it. We had to go through the main bit of the of the kind of camping area. But this, whoever it was, and they, if they ever hear this, they'll know who it was. They said that they'd had an even worse gig. They'd done a gig in a rugby club and they'd absolutely died on their arse. And they could not wear, and all these really angry rugby players looking at them like they wanted to kill them. It was a male comedian, and he said, he was like, fuck it, I'm going to go out the fire escape. So that there was the stage, and then there was a fire escape to one side of the stage. And he just thought, I'm just going to literally go out that fire escape. I'll find the car park. Yeah. He went out the fire escape and set the fire alarm off.
Oh, fuck.
And then the fire stewards at the bottom of the steps said, could you go back onto the stage, please, and tell everybody the fire alarm was
gone. Oh, no. So
to go back in the room and go, I've just set the fire alarm up. And everyone was like throwing stuff at him. So, yeah I decided it could have been worse. But that was... And that gig, I won't say who booked me for it, but at the time he was booking me for everything. Like he runs a lot of out-of-town gigs. And he kept booking me for everything going. And... You know when you see someone, you've had a bad gig, and I was like, oh, sorry about that. I said, that wasn't great. And he was like, no, you were grand, you were fine. Uh-huh. But he's never booked me again.
Oh, so no.
I think it obviously was a stinker.
Oh, well, that's it. We all have them. That's it. And like you've done two shows, right? Two full shows. Is that right?
The Fringe? Yeah, two hours, yeah.
So what,
full hours,
what were they?
Yeah. So I did Super Cali Fragile Lipstick, which I did in, when was that? I think 3 years ago. No, it must have been 4 years ago. And then 2 years ago, I did Invisible to Edinburgh ago, so 18 months ago. So yeah, Super Cali was actually, I wish I'd saved that title because it's a good title.
Yeah.
So that one was kind of what most people do for their first hour if they're not doing what they should do, which is I just wove together 60 minutes of my best stand-up. And that's what that was. So it wasn't bad. It was a decent hour, but it wasn't really a show. And then Invisible, which I did, you know, the last Edinburgh that happened, so 2019. Yeah, that was a proper show. And I was proud of that one. That was the year I turned 50. Yeah. And it was inspired by this. There was a B-list French celebrity, a guy called Yann Moix,
right,
who made global headlines when he said that a woman at 50 is invisible. So, and it got a lot of attention at the time. And there were some brilliant retorts on Twitter and loads of kind of hot 50-year-old women going, you know, here's a picture of my ass.
Yeah.
Yann Moix, don't you think I look pretty good? And he was like, please stop sending me pics of your asses. But I never sent him my ass. So Invisible was a kind of... The guy that said at 50 women are invisible. So that was, I was really proud of that show. Yeah, that was 18 months ago.
There's not really anyone that goes up to see The Fringe, not perform, but actually go to see the shows, is in that age bracket anyway, really, aren't they? So it was a great pull, I'm sure, for the to get numbers in.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, I've always, because I've done a few bits on Radio 4, I think people hear me, but the stuff I've done on the radio hasn't been as comedic or certainly not as rude. So the problem I sometimes have is that people who've heard me do more sort of serious stuff, and I also do kind of, as I say, like keynote speaking and business speaking, people sometimes like really like me but aren't expecting me to be a comedian. So I usually have to write something into the show that kind of gets people to redo their dial, you know, to turn the dial from Radio 4 to comedy.
Yeah.
At the start of the shows. I mean, God, I haven't exactly got a huge fan base, but I do have some nice people who kind of follow the stuff I do.
Great.
So yeah, that was really good. And I don't know when any of us will go to Edinburgh again.
Yeah,
do you? I mean,
so
it's looking,
no,
it's not going to be this year, I fear.
Yeah, it might just be a like online thing again. I don't know. It doesn't look like it's going to thaw anytime soon at all, Callie. You know, it's just it's a bit depressing to be honest. But
we've got to give a shout out to we can't mention Edinburgh last Edinburgh, the COVID Edinburgh, without mentioning the brilliant Nathan Cassidy.
Yes,
who I love, and he went obviously and did his own show up there and was the only show up there. But I mean, the thing about Nathan is he's somebody who should be a massive name in my opinion. He's
works so hard. Works so hard.
Good on him for doing that and getting some long deserved attention.
Yeah, he was been on this podcast as well, and he has got some wonderful pranks on that he's played on the Fringe, and like, you know, cloning the website and everything. Oh, just talk to him. It was brilliant. Some brilliant ideas to like win those was it Malcolm Hardy Awards, you know, the Fringe stunts. Excellent. Anyway, so with comedy, right, at the beginning I kind of like saw myself as like a certain models, or like not like fashion models, but like a model of like a certain job, or a job, or maybe could be an imaginary. I ask this question to every comedian I have on the podcast, but I usually do it, but much better than this. It's getting cold. So basically,
yeah, you're getting very. I think if you've got hypothermia, do you want to?
It's getting there. I mean, the hands have gone blue. It's fine. It's fine. I'll cut them off. But like, I don't need them. I can scroll with my nose now. In comedy, do you see yourself? Well, at the beginning, maybe probably is more relevant. At the beginning, we started comedy. Did you see yourself as any particular model? In comedy, is it like maybe a job, or it could be an imaginary animal or anything like this, but like, do you see yourself anything like that?
So give me an example.
Okay, for example,
as you asked that question, I have no clue what you're talking about.
Oh, it's a difficult one. It's fine, take your time. It's that there's a comedian called Sean Mio, and he describes himself as a gun for hire, a gunslinger going around the country like a Ronin, if you like.
Yeah,
it's a hard one. I don't know, maybe like at the beginning on this podcast, I've had PCSO, you know, someone who looks after the crowd. So is everything okay? Is everyone doing okay? Make sure is there, an IT technician just turns the laughs on and off. So like it could be anything.
I think I was probably like a 1970s sort of like TV warm up, you know. So
right.
I'd be kind of like trying to keep the shiny floored game show going.
Yeah.
Victoria Wood's about to come on. I want to make sure you're all okay.
Yeah.
I've got some nice kind of gentle jokes. I'm not going to upset anybody.
Great.
I'm going to really try and work the room. So I think I had a real sort of like cheesy, not like a sort of Alan Partridge figure, but not ironically. Like I'm just going to like real cheesy grin my way through this.
So great.
It's going to be just a lovely experience. It just didn't occur to me that I just thought it was all about what the audience wanted to hear. I didn't realize it's also what you want to say.
Yeah.
So I think that was quite profound, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So I think I was, I'd have been, like a sort of like, you know, and obviously I've got lovely teeth. So I think I'd have been a kind of tits and teeth kind of like 1970s figure.
Great.
Or maybe a sort of local TV presenter type person, you know, somebody who did the, you know, weather or maybe the local news. So Fern Britton was the local presenter who did the local kind of radio stuff where I grew up in Dorset. I think I thought I was probably like a sort of comedy's Fern Britton, which isn't a great thing to aim for, but hey, I think that, if I'm honest, that's where I probably was.
Everyone's got their place. Everyone has their place. That's what it is, right?
Yeah, and I think my place is, I don't think anyone's ever going to say that to you again on this podcast. I think we're safe. I think I've cornered the market on the comedy's Fern Britton front.
Great. And like, so you said earlier you're writing a book. What's the book about? 80,000 words. Are you going to just hit 80,000 and drop it? Or are you just going to like, is it a biography or what is it?
I'm just going to keep going until I get vaccinated, although apparently that won't be that long now for me. But the book is called Namaste, Motherfuckers.
Oh, right.
And I'm also, I'm about to launch a podcast of the same name. So I've just finished recording my first 8 episodes. So we're just editing them now. I say we. Someone is editing them.
Oh, you're lucky.
And then we're going to roll them. We're going to roll them out. A week at a time, starting next month.
So, excellent. Yes. It's just like, is it self-help?
Yes. Yeah, so self-help meets comedy meets business. So yeah, it's kind of like self-help for people who hate self-help. But yeah, it's the primary thing is that it's fun to listen to. So I've got quite a diverse kind of set of people I'm interviewing. I did that with Arthur Smith last week. And got John Lloyd, QI producer. And
yeah.
Well, everyone will know who he is. So yeah, I've got some really nice. It's not just comedians. In fact, not that many comedians on it. It's fairly kind of broad range of guests. So yeah, so I'm busy doing that at the moment. I say busy, keeping myself busy.
That's great. But I'd like to ask this one as well. What is the first joke you wrote? Do you remember that?
I'm trying to think. Well, the first one I wrote that I really used to like. What was that? Well, I can't remember what the punchline was, but I don't remember what the joke was.
Yeah.
I do remember one that which didn't last at all. I say joke, and it was, you know, I walked out of the tube and this guy shouted at me, "You fat cunt." And I walked over and I said, you know, you just cannot call a woman fat. So that obviously didn't used to work very well. It's like, tumble, dude. That was obviously hilarious. Yeah. And also I realised, don't open on cunt. Yeah. If you want to say that, maybe build up to that. So that was one that didn't work. I did have one which I dusted off in Edinburgh, the last Edinburgh I did, at somebody, I can't remember who, was doing like a classic, it was like your old jokes. I think it was called the Antique Jokes.
Yeah.
Show or something.
Great.
And you did your own old jokes. So I dug out all my old jokes for this thing, and actually I found a couple that I really liked. And brilliant. One of them was in regard to my son's autism. I wrote this very early on, and it was my son was diagnosed with autism a few years ago. When it happened, I didn't know anything about autism, but luckily my son was on hand to write me a list. So, which I think is quite a good gag. I was like, wow, I wrote that week one.
Did great. Me? Yeah, nice. And we talked about your first gig. Do we? Where your first gig was? Where?
It was, I did Logan Murray's stand up and deliver course, and it was upstairs at whatever the pub was where I did that. It was in Kennington, upstairs in a pub in Kennington. I can't remember the pub.
Great. And do you remember the gig after that?
The gig after that, I do remember, because that was at Comedy Cavendish Arms, and I won the little comedy version trophy. So my first gig was a bloody disaster. So on the course with Logan, because as I say, I was reasonably polished in terms of being able to deliver material, and I could write okay, not great, but I think everybody on the course thought I was going to be like a pretty, you know, to do all right at it. And I ended up closing the night, not that they called it closing, but I was the last actor, and I was bloody awful. I just sort of learnt and read out my shit, and it was awful. And then I thought, God, I'm not doing another one unless I'll do one more, and if that's as shit as this, I'm giving up. And then I did the Comedy Virgins, and I won that little trophy, which I think is a tiny thing. But then I thought, well, I must be all right if I won a little tiny open mic thing. So I do remember my second gig, and it was a lot better than my first.
That's great. Hey, look, you won a trophy in like your first proper gig. I mean, that, you know, not everyone can say that. It's fine.
Well, have you seen the size of the comedy?
Yes, I have. It's tiny.
Yes, about the size of your thumb. and it's sort of, if it came flying out of a Christmas cracker, you'd be like, that's disappointing.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of trophy that I won.
That's great. So, Kelly, look, you're busy, man. This is great. Was it like, and have you been writing sitcoms as well? Or have you been doing that too?
No, I haven't done. So I have had, one of the things I was looking at was doing like a sort of 50-something Fleabag. So because there isn't really anything about that's my kind of age group, women-led. And a couple of quite decent production companies got in touch with me saying, you know, we'd love to, when I did Invisible, they were like, we'd love to get involved in this and we could hook you up with writing partners.
Brilliant.
And I never really did it. I never say never. I think I'm just really insecure about doing it because I worked on the other side of the camera for years.
Yeah.
I've worked on so many, I've been executive produced shows and I've read so many other people's scripts. And I just know how bloody hard it is to do it well. And I just think it's just not really what I do. So I think I'm probably held back a bit by the fact I worked in the industry for so long. And I just think, well, that's not what I do. So I've been a bit slow off the mark on the kind of doing other writing. But I do lots of other types of broadcasting and performing. And maybe you just have to play to your strength.
That's right.
Never say never on the sitcom.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you're a neuro-linguistic programming practitioner, right? So this is really going to help you with this Namaste Motherfuckers show as well, right? You're going to be helping these people in the show.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not very sort of evangelical about self-help or NLP or anything else I've done. I've trained in a lot of different things over the years, mainly because I get bored easily and I'm always sort of trying to do something else. And I've just got addicted to sort of learning new things.
Cool.
So I'm not a very earnest person when it comes to that stuff, but I have also worked with people and sort of helped them through stuff. So I've decided there's got to be something between like comedy and my business knowledge and all the sort of helping people things. Yeah. So I do think it's like you can have a conversation with a mate down the pub, right? And you're laughing and you're drinking, but they do say something where you're like, oh, actually, I'm really glad they said that. I'm going to remember that. That matters to me. So it's those little pearls of wisdom down the pub type of self-help, I'd say.
Great. Well, we can find that coming up. When's the first one drop?
We're thinking, well, my birthday is St. Patrick's Day. Oh. So we're thinking we're going to do it either on or around my birthday.
Well, Kelly, where can we find you then?
So you can follow me on Instagram at Callie Beaton Comedian, or you can find me on Twitter, and I've got a website. Normally I would say go to my website and you can see all my upcoming gigs. You can go to my website and see my empty upcoming gigs page, but you can see there's all the clips I've got of telly I've done and comedy and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, do give me a follow.
Callie, thank you so much for coming on the show and spending an hour of your time telling me all about yourself and the stuff you got coming up. I really appreciate it.
Lovely talking to you. Now go and get warm. I'm worried this is almost a medical emergency and you've got to get out of that bloody shed.
Oh, brilliant. Thanks, Callie.
Thanks for having me, Winter. Take care.
And that was episode 109 with the great Callie Beaton. I hope you enjoyed that one, guys. And look, I hope you understood what I was saying there when, you know, when I was listening back to the episode, when I was editing it, it was just so easy to interview her because she speaks in such a well-structured way. Every question is answered in like, it feels like a learned paragraph, but she thinks along those lines of just, oh, it's like a report. It's like her conversation is like a well thought out, concise report. It's excellent. Anyway, she's such a pro, a great comedian, and you can find her podcast online where you get all your podcasts from. And her podcast is Namaste Motherfuckers. You can find her on all the socials, but go and see her live. That's where comedy lives. She's been in Edinburgh every year and she'll be everywhere. She's done all the comedy TV panel shows. She's been on Comedy Central, as I say. But look, go and see her live. Excellent comedian. And you can find her on all the socials at Callie Beaton. That's CallyBeaton comedian. So go and find her there. Now, if you want to follow me, you can. It's Winter Phonander, and it's also Winter Dominus. That's at Winter Dominus on Instagram. That's WinterDominus. You can find me there. And look, if you want to like the Comedy Defect podcast Facebook page, you can go to Facebook, like that page. You can also join the group. I just post up gig events there and also the podcast as well. And I put it on YouTube because people can find it there too. Just, you know, in case all the social media falls away and the only one left is YouTube. Look, I'm not hedging my bets. So look, you know, you never know. Your account might get deleted for some reason. I don't know why. I'm not kind of that controversial, but you don't know what's going to happen, do you? So look, it's in all the places where you can find podcasts as well. Look, you can find me as well and go deep dive on what I'm doing and do some sketches. I was doing some sketches, but at the moment I'm just learning to walk again, okay? That's what I'm trying to do right now. For reals, I'm trying to learn to walk again. That's the thing I'm doing. So for the new year, I'm just going to learn to walk. Hopefully, eventually I'll be able to run and we'll see how we go. But look, you know, as I say, you got to baby steps and see how we go. But so that was January's episode. Happy New Year. I hope you had a good one and you've like, you know, you hit the gym and you're doing all right. You're getting through it, you know, working off some of that chocolate and Christmas sort of indulgence. So look, hope you enjoyed that one. Episode 109 with Callie Beaton. Next month, we've got my favorite comedian. When I first started comedy, he was the king for me. And speaking to him for an hour was just like, I was like a kid at Christmas. It is the wonderful, the very surreal. We've got for February's episode, he is from Canada. He is random as hell. And he is just so unique. It is the excellent, one of my favorites. And also I'll tell you this is, I'll tell you on the podcast. He's one of my favorites. And he's just sort of like a traveling storyteller, it feels like, you know. He's great. It's excellent. Tony Law. I love Tony Law. He's brilliant. I've had him at my gig and he is just such a lovely, lovely guy to gig with. And just a great comedian as well. He was one of my comedy heroes when I first started. I was like, wow, what are you doing? You don't do that. Dizzy breaking all the rules. This is brilliant. So that is for episode 110 in February. And that is with the excellent Mr. Tony Law. So go and check that out on for February's episode. It's just, I was like a kid at Christmas when he said yes to doing this podcast. And I was like, thank you so much. It was a pleasure to spend an hour or so with him and get to know him. But yeah, so until then, enjoy the rest of your January. Wrap up warm, get all the lip seal out. I don't even know what I'm saying. What am I even saying? Get lip seal out. I don't know. You know, I don't know. Moisturize. I don't know. Don't put SPF on. Just, you know, kind of like wrap up. That's what I'm trying to say. Put a scarf on if you want to put gloves on. But if you're from the north, just wear a t-shirt. You'd be grand. But look, until February, speak to you then. This is another long outro as well. But you know, I'm just going to go with it and see how we go. People don't listen to these anyway, do they? I don't even know. It doesn't matter. Anyway, we'll see you in February. Take care.